Imagine asking a supercomputer for investment advice. It turns for a few seconds and hands you this mathematically flawless, beautifully formatted, incredibly confident rationale for buying a stock.
Right. It looks completely undeniable.
Exactly. And because it is so perfectly reasoned, well, it basically guarantees that you are going to underperform the market.
It really does. Because certainty in markets usually means the opportunity is already gone.
Yeah. Welcome to the deep dive. I am so glad you're here with us. Because today, our mission is to help you graduate.
Graduate from using artificial intelligence as just, a casual search engine.
Spot on.
Right.
We are unpacking how to command an actual agent fleet for high-stakes decision-making. Specifically, we're talking about investment research today.
And we are pulling from some really fascinating source material for this.
We are. It's a piece called Commanding an Agent Fleet: Five Core Patterns, and it comes straight out of Chapter 8 of the AI Native Investor Curriculum.
It's a fantastic chapter.
Okay, let's unpack this, because if you've ever felt like your AI tools are just regurgitating the obvious, what we're talking about today is the exact opposite of that.
Right. We're talking about using AI not to find the right answer, but to create what the curriculum calls structured disagreement.
Structured disagreement. I love that term.
It really is the entire foundation of this approach. I mean,
Right.
we have to establish right out of the gate that a single AI agent, no matter how advanced it is really just a tool.
Right.
But when you structure multiple agents into a fleet, you actively create opposing viewpoints. And that tension, that disagreement, is what actually sharpens your human judgment.
It forces you to think critically rather than just passively nodding along to a machine's output.
Exactly.
But, before we can actually build that fleet, I feel like we have to talk about why our default instinct is so wrong.
Oh, absolutely. Because the default instinct is terrible.
It is. Because my first instinct, and I think, everyone's instinct, is to treat the AI like an oracle.
Yeah.
You ask it a huge question and you expect a huge answer.
Which leads us directly into what the text calls the single agent trap.
Right.
This is where nearly everyone stumbles when they try to use AI for something complex, like deploying capital. So let's say you're looking at your portfolio and you ask a single AI agent a massive, open-ended question like, should I buy Nvidia stock?
Right. And what happens? It spits out this gorgeous three-page analysis.
Oh, it looks
You
incredible.
get bullet points, you get pros and cons, forward-looking statements, a little summary at the bottom. It looks as if it was written by a professional at a major bank.
It does look professional, but we really need to look under the hood at how large language models actually work.
Okay, break that down for us.
Well, they are, at their core, sophisticated prediction engines trained on vast probability distributions. They are essentially hyper-advanced autocomplete.
Right, they guess the next best word.
Exactly. So when you ask a broad question about a popular stock,
Yeah.
it doesn't do original analysis. It defaults to the mathematical center of its training data.
Meaning what, practically?
It means it is essentially giving you the median opinion of every sell-side analyst on Wall Street.
And just to clarify for everyone listening, a sell-side analyst is basically a researcher at a big brokerage firm whose job is to write reports convincing investors to buy or sell.
Right.
So the AI is just kind of mushing all those reports together.
Exactly. It's taking the most common middle-of-the-road consensus and dressing it up in very authoritative prose.
Wow.
It fundamentally cannot cross-check its own logic, and it cannot hold two genuinely opposing viewpoints at the exact same time. It's built to please you with a coherent answer, not challenge you with a difficult truth.
So it's basically like asking a magic eight ball that just happens to have an MBA.
That is a perfect
It's going
analogy.
to sound incredibly smart while telling you exactly what everybody else on the planet already thinks.
Yes, it is the consensus wrapped in authoritative vocabulary.
Okay, but let me push back on this a little bit.
Sure.
If I know it's going to give me the median answer,
Yeah.
why can't I just, engineer my way out of it?
What do you mean?
Like, what if I use the absolute smartest, most expensive single model available and I write just a mega prompt? I'm talking 50 specific parameters, incredibly complex instructions. Shouldn't that be enough to force a unique insight out of it?
You would think so, but this is where the mechanics of financial markets collide with AI.
Mm.
There is a fascinating inverse correlation to understand here.
Could. What is it?
The more confident and certain the AI's output sounds, the less likely it contains any original insight.
Wait, really? Certainty is a bad thing.
In investing, absolutely.
How does that work?
Think about it. If an agent can easily synthesize a rock-solid, incredibly confident case for buying a stock using public data, it means that case is already widely known.
Oh.
It's consensus. And how do markets work? If everyone knows a stock is going to do well, everybody buys it and the price goes up.
Oh, wow. The market has already priced it in.
Exactly. The efficient market hypothesis at work.
Oh.
You cannot beat the market using the exact same consensus thesis that the market is already built upon. If the AI sounds perfectly certain, all the profit has already been squeezed out of that idea.
That is wild. Confidence equals uselessness.
Pretty much.
Okay, so if the single agent is just feeding us priced-in consensus, how do we actually break this trap?
We break the process. If a single massive prompt fails, we have to fundamentally restructure how we hand off tasks.
Right.
Which brings us to the first core pattern of building a fleet, which is delegation. And this requires a total mindset shift.
Because you can't just give it a massive prompt anymore.
No, you cannot give an AI a broad task. You must break the job down into distinct, narrow roles.
Right, because if you just say, you know, research Costco, you're setting it up to fail.
Exactly.
It's like bringing a brand new hire into the office on day one and saying, hey, welcome to the firm. Go figure out our entire corporate strategy for the next decade and present it to the board on Friday.
It's a total recipe for disaster.
It is. Not because the new hire is stupid, but because you've given them zero scope, no parameters, and literally no definition of success.
Yes, and structurally, when you ask a broad prompt like research Costco, the AI's attention mechanism, you know, the part of its architecture that decides what information is important, it gets smeared across way too many concepts.
Oh, I see.
It's trying to weigh hot dog prices against global supply chain logistics and currency fluctuations all at once. The context window just gets diluted.
So you have to decompose the task into discrete steps and assign them one by one.
That's the only way.
What do those steps actually look like in practice then?
The curriculum outlines a very precise five-step decomposition.
Okay.
Step one is data gathering. You don't ask for an opinion. You tell an agent to act as a data scraper. Pull the last 5 years of financials and compute specific metrics like revenue growth and free cash flow.
Got it. Just the raw numbers.
Right. Then step two is pattern recognition. You hand that data to a new instance and ask it to identify which financial trend is the most concerning and why.
Okay, so it's narrow. It's just looking for the red flags in the numbers.
Precisely. Step three is valuation framing. You have an agent build a discounted cash flow model under base, optimistic, and pessimistic scenarios.
And for anyone who isn't a finance nerd, a discounted cash flow model, or a DCF, is basically just a mathematical way of guessing what all the cash a company will ever make in the future is worth in today's money.
That's exactly it.
And it's heavily dependent on whatever assumptions you plug into it, right?
Exactly, which is why in step four, risk surfacing, you ask a completely separate agent to list the top five risks to those exact assumptions.
Oh, smart.
Yeah, and categorizing them by probability and impact. And finally, step five is drafting a concise thesis based purely on the outputs of the first four steps.
Okay, so you've broken the task down and the agents come back with all these separate beautiful spreadsheets and analyses.
Right.
But here's the terrifying part. How do you know the AI didn't just, you know, hallucinate all the numbers?
Because they will do that.
They absolutely will, which transitions us to the second pattern, verification. How do we check its work?
This is where the concept of the fleet really takes shape. Verification requires independent checks, not just proofreading.
What do you mean by proofreading in this context?
Well, the naive way people verify AI output is they generate a report with Agent A, and then they paste it into Agent B and say, hey, check this for errors.
Right, which never works because Agent B just reads it and says, wow, this looks very internally consistent and well-written. Great job.
Exactly. It's the difference between a peer review and an independent audit.
Oh, I love that distinction. Let's unpack that.
Sure.
If I give you my memo to peer review, you're going to catch my typos. You'll tell me if my grammar is bad.
Right.
But if I want an actual independent audit, I have to give you the exact same raw data I started with. I hide my memo from you so you can't see it, and I wait to see if you reach the exact same mathematical conclusion I did.
That is the exact architecture you need. In an AI fleet, effective verification means Agent B never sees Agent A's output.
Got it. So they're working completely blind to each other.
Yes. So Agent A builds that discounted cash flow model we talked about. At the exact same time, you instruct Agent B to build a multiples-based valuation.
Which, to translate again, is basically pricing a company by looking at the neighbors.
Exactly.
Like, All the houses on this street sell for 10 times their rental income, so this house should too.
Spot on. So now you have two entirely different methodologies.
Right.
If Agent A says the stock is worth $180 based on future cash, but Agent B says it's only worth $120 based on what similar companies trade for, that is where the real work begins.
You've manufactured a fight between the machines.
You have. And what's fascinating here is the interesting question isn't which machine is right.
It's not.
No. The interesting question is, what specific assumptions in Agent A's DCF model are justifying a 50% premium over the rest of the market?
Oh, wow.
That tension points you exactly to where you need to focus your human judgment.
This is brilliant. Okay, so we've got these independently verified pieces of the puzzle. We have data. We have conflicting valuations.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now we have to refine them without just getting stuck in the mud.
Right.
Which brings us to the next two patterns, iteration and composition.
Right.
Because I know from personal experience, it is very easy to just spin your wheels in endless AI chat loops.
Iteration is a massive trap if you don't control it. To iterate effectively, the loops must converge on a final answer.
How do you force them to converge?
You need a specific target, a convergence criterion, and a strict limit. The curriculum recommends a maximum of 3 to 5 cycles.
What's the goal of those cycles, though? Just making it read better.
No, not at all. The goal is pressure testing. Have you ever come across Charlie Munger's famous rule for thinking?
Invert. Always invert, right?
Exactly. You use iteration to find the strongest argument against your own position.
Give me an example of how that works with an agent.
For example, let's say your first draft has a kill criteria, meaning a specific reason you would sell the stock immediately. And the agent drafts, I'll sell if the stock drops 30%.
Which is terrible. That's not a thesis kill criteria. That's just a stop loss order. It tells you absolutely nothing about the underlying business.
Right. It's just a price reaction. So through iteration, you push the agent. You say, invert this. What business fundamentals would have to fail for this stock to drop 30%?
Oh, I see.
And by cycle 3, it revises the criteria to something precise, like I will sell if management pivots away from the enterprise segment, which currently generates 65% of their gross margin.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting for me, though. I have to push back on this strict limit of 3 to 5 cycles.
Go for it.
Because if you're listening to this, you probably know the feeling. Iterating with AI feels incredibly productive.
It does feel productive.
It's addictive. Every draft looks just a little bit sharper. The formatting gets cleaner. If I'm willing to put in the time, why not go to cycle 10 or 15 to get it perfect?
Because over-iterating is just procrastination disguised as productivity.
Oof. That hits a little too close to home.
It's true for all of us. I mean, if you are on cycle 8 of refining an investment thesis, you are no longer generating new financial information.
What am I generating?
You are generating comfort. You aren't improving the thesis. You're just avoiding the anxiety of making the actual financial decision.
Wow.
The process has stopped being analytical and has become purely editorial.
Generating comfort instead of information. That is such a crucial takeaway.
It really is.
Okay, so we cap our iteration.
Yeah.
We force the issue. Once that's done, we move to composition. We have to combine all these specialized outputs into one cohesive thesis.
Right.
But if we just staple Agent A's valuation to Agent B's risk analysis, we're going to have a mess.
You'll have a Frankenstein analysis.
Right.
To avoid that, the curriculum emphasizes establishing a shared assumptions anchor.
What happens if you skip that step?
If you don't establish this upfront, Agent A might produce a super bullish revenue forecast, assuming massive economic growth, while Agent B produces a pessimistic risk analysis based on an impending recession.
It's like having a band where the drummer is playing heavy metal and the guitarist is playing smooth jazz.
Exactly.
They might both be incredibly talented musicians, but if you put them together on stage, it's just noise. You have to give them the exact same sheet music, the assumptions anchor, before they start playing.
That's a great way to think about it. But once they play their parts, who writes the final song?
You do.
Marielle. You do. The human must write the final narrative thread.
You can't just have an agent summarize the whole thing at the end.
You can have an agent draft a rough synthesis, sure. But if you do not physically rewrite the story, connecting the evidence to the conclusion in your own words, using your own reasoning, you don't truly own the thesis.
And if you don't own the thesis, you have no conviction. You'll panic and sell the second the stock price drops 20% on a random Tuesday.
Exactly. You have to internalize the logic.
All right, so if you were listening to this right now, you might be thinking, great, I've decomposed the prompts, I've verified independently, I've limited my iterations, I'm safe.
But you're not.
We need to talk about when the fleet turns on you. Because even if you do everything perfectly, AI can still confidently lead you right off a cliff.
It can, and it will.
The research outlines four domain-specific failure modes. And these aren't your typical AI hallucinations, are they?
No, they are incredibly insidious.
Because general AI might fail by generating a picture of a human with six fingers or hallucinating a weird poem.
Right, which is obvious. But financial AI fails in ways that blend perfectly into the professional formatting of a Wall Street memo.
What's the first trap we need to look out for?
Outdated data.
Okay, how does that happen?
The AI simply uses stale numbers from its training corpus instead of pulling the most recent quarterly filings.
Oh, so it just remembers an old fact.
Yeah, it might confidently state a company has $2 billion in cash, which was absolutely true in 2023, but today they only have $800 million.
That is a massive difference.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one is consensus blindness, which we touched on earlier.
Right.
It correctly identifies all of a company's strengths. Great revenue, amazing market share. But it completely fails to analyze whether the current stock price already reflects those strengths.
Exactly. It tells you it's a wonderful company, but forgets to mention it's a mathematically terrible stock at the current valuation.
That makes total sense. What's the third failure mode?
Fabricated sources. This one is dangerous. Agents will invent highly plausible sounding citations.
They won't just say revenue is going to grow, right?
No. They will say, according to Goldman Sachs' Q3 Semiconductor Outlook Report, revenue is projected to grow 35% by 2027.
Wow. It reads exactly like a real citation.
Except that Goldman Sachs report literally does not exist.
It just invented a very believable lie.
Yes.
And then there's the fourth one, the one that actually makes my blood run cold. Unit errors.
Confusing millions with billions?
Oh, man.
Or stating a $45 million quarterly revenue as $45 billion.
Okay, stop right there. Because practically speaking, how on earth do we catch a unit error?
It's hard.
If the AI's math looks perfect on the surface, the ratios line up internally, and the formatting is flawless, How do I spot that it's off by a factor of 1,000?
This is where we have to talk about human psychology. Specifically, automation bias.
Automation bias.
Yes. Our brains are inherently lazy.
That's true.
When we are presented with a document that has perfect times, New Roman formatting, bold headers, and confident prose, our critical thinking centers literally shut down. We just assume the machine did the math right.
So what's the tactical defense against that?
I think it's called anchoring.
How does anchoring work?
Before you read a single word of the agent's final analysis, you must look up three numbers yourself.
Like manually?
Yes.
Yeah.
Go to a reliable financial website manually and find the revenue, the market cap, and the number of employees.
That's it. Just write down three numbers.
It takes 2 minutes. But what you are doing is building a psychological circuit breaker.
A circuit breaker.
Exactly. Those three numbers triangulate the company's true scale in your mind.
So when you start reading the AI's beautifully formatted report, and it casually mentions the company has $45 billion in revenue,
your brain hits that circuit breaker.
Because my manual anchor was $45
million. Yes. You instantly spot the lie. If you don't have those anchors in your head before you read, you are reading blind. And the automation bias will trick you into accepting a catastrophic error.
That is such an incredible insight. It's not just a math check. It's a defense mechanism against our own psychology.
Absolutely.
Okay, so knowing how to spot these failures brings us to the ultimate question of this deep dive.
Sorry.
When your multi-agent fleet finally hands you this independently verified, rigorously tested analysis,
yeah,
how do you know whether to actually trust it?
This is what the curriculum calls the trust meta question, and the answer is deeply counterintuitive.
How so?
When you run multiple agents on a problem, unanimous agreement is actually a massive red flag.
Wait, really? If my research agent, my valuation agent, and my risk agent all independently come back and say, buy this stock, I shouldn't feel confident.
No, you should be worried.
Why?
Unanimous agreement almost always means it's an obvious consensus that the market has already priced in.
Oh, we're back to the consensus trap.
Exactly. Or, even worse, it means all your independently prompted agents just reverted to the exact same flawed training data. Complete agreement means there is no edge.
Okay, so complete agreement is bad. What about complete disagreement? Every agent hates the other's output.
Complete disagreement means the underlying data is simply too ambiguous to make a decision. The business is undergoing a transition that is just too messy to model.
You just walk away from that one.
You walk away. What you want, the absolute sweet spot, is partial agreement.
So Agent A loves the revenue growth, but Agent B is throwing up red flags about the debt on the balance sheet.
Exactly. Because what does that tension do? It forces you to use your own human judgment to figure out which variable matters more right now.
It hands you the exact fulcrum of the decision.
Precisely.
But, you know, if you're listening to this and thinking, I don't have the time or the coding skills to build a massive fleet just to check my 401k or buy a few tech stocks, hang with us.
Yeah, you don't need to be a software engineer.
Because I want to ask about what the curriculum calls the fleet complexity trap. If I'm an individual investor, do I need to be running a 12-agent pipeline with complex conditional logic?
No, please don't do that.
Because honestly, that sounds like when I was in college, and I would spend 8 hours color-coding my study notes with 5 different highlighters instead of actually, you know, studying for the exam.
That analogy is absolutely perfect. Building increasingly elaborate AI workflows becomes an engineering project that distracts you from actually investing.
Right.
The curriculum warns strongly against this trap. You do not need 12 agents. All you really need is 3 core roles.
Just 3.
Just 3. A research agent to scrape and structure the data, a red team agent to actively attack and try to destroy your thesis, and a monitoring agent to keep an eye on your ongoing positions. Keep it simple.
Because the entire point of the fleet is to inform your judgment, not replace it.
Exactly.
Which brings us to the elephant in the room, the Bloomberg question.
Ah, yes.
If I have this 3-agent setup running smoothly in my home office, am I suddenly competing with the big institutional firms on Wall Street?
Absolutely not. And it is vital to understand why, so you don't get arrogant. AI agents do not replace a $24,000 a year Bloomberg terminal.
Because a Bloomberg terminal isn't just a search engine, right? It's hardware wired into the financial system.
Right. It provides proprietary paywalled data, real-time order flow, credit default swap pricing, supply chain satellite imagery, and it provides it with millisecond execution speed.
And my agents can't do that.
AI agents operate on public data with a time lag. You cannot compete with Goldman Sachs on speed, and you cannot compete on private data.
But the curriculum argues that this structural difference is actually fine for the individual. Why is that?
Because as an individual investor, you have structural advantages that institutions do not possess.
Like what?
You have patience. Mm-hmm. A mutual fund manager has intense career risk. If they underperform the market for 1 quarter, they might get fired.
But I'm not going to fire myself.
Exactly. You won't fire yourself. You can hold a stock for 5 years. What agents do is compress the time it takes you to access and structure public information.
They democratize the synthesis of data.
Yes. Which frees you up to focus purely on building your judgment over a time horizon of years rather than milliseconds. It's a completely different game.
So what does this all mean? To summarize our mission today, the goal of building an agent fleet isn't to build a magic machine that makes the final decision for you.
No, not at all.
It's not about outsourcing your brain to avoid the hard work.
Oh.
The purpose is to create structured disagreement that forces you to think more precisely. Because the scarcest resource in investing isn't data. It isn't even time anymore. The scarcest resource is clarity about your own reasoning.
That is the ultimate takeaway. A well-designed fleet is really just a mirror.
A mirror.
It reflects the quality of your own questions back at you. If you ask vague, broad questions, you get useless consensus.
Right.
If you ask precise, decomposed questions, you get actionable insight. And over a lifetime of investing, the precision of your questions is what truly compounds.
The precision of your questions compounds. I love that.
That's powerful.
It is. But before we wrap up today's deep dive, I want to leave you, our listener, with a final, slightly mind-bending thought to mull over. Something to chew on that goes beyond the curriculum.
Oh, I like where this might be going.
We've just spent all this time talking about how powerful this structured 3-agent fleet is for giving the individual an edge. But what happens to the stock market if this becomes the new baseline?
If everyone is doing it.
Yeah. Think about it. What happens when millions of retail investors and eventually all the massive institutions are using the exact same underlying LLMs to run their red teams and their DCF valuations?
That is a wild scenario.
If everyone is using the exact same mathematical logic to analyze the same public data, does this fleet strategy eventually eliminate all market inefficiencies?
Or does it do the opposite?
Right. Could it trigger massive, unprecedented, fleet-driven market bubbles where that AI consensus blindness we talked about scales up and infects the entire global economy all at once?
It's a fascinating risk. If everyone's machines agree, the mirage of competence becomes a global illusion.
Exactly. So while you're pondering whether your AI setup is going to accidentally crash the global economy, I encourage you to try this out for yourself this week.
Definitely try it.
Design your own simple three-agent fleet, pick a stock, decompose the tasks, verify the outputs independently, and see what happens when the machines finally disagree with you.
Because the real value is in the disagreement.
Because remember, that beautifully polished gold bar the AI hands you, it's only valuable if you're the one who ultimately decides what it's worth. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you on the next deep dive.